Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Lynn Johnson and Bruce Rawls. And I have Bruce on the phone from Castle Rock, Colorado. I believe you're still in Castle Rock, are you?
I believe I'm still here.
Well, that's your problem.
And good morning to all, including Lynn and everyone and Joan and whoever else is listening, since I'm not monitoring Pal Talk at the moment. So anyway, good morning.
Good morning. And you know, how are you doing? Boy, I'll tell you what, it's nice and cold down here in Pueblo. Did you guys get snow?
We did. Yeah, about an inch or two, not much. But it's still kind of icy on the driveway. I shoveled off about a 3-foot swath to make it safe to walk to and from the sidewalk. But the rest of the driveway, since we have a north-facing driveway, is a little icy. So it'll melt. Yeah.
Yes, it'll melt. That's one good thing about living in Colorado, is that even though it snows, you know, it doesn't take very long. Down on this level now, up in the mountains, it will stick. But here, the sun will come out, and it'll be warm and melty. So that's all, you know, wonderful here. So, but you're going to be moving to a place where, do they get snow where you're moving to?
Not much. No, we'll be just 100 feet above you know, sea level, so it's not, rarely.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, awesome. Well, you have suggested a, let me get the link.
Frequently asked question, again.
Frequently asked question, my goodness.
What a run, huh?
let's see, 1247 is, I think, the one that you are suggesting we look at. Is that correct?
Uh-huh, yeah.
All right, so I just posted the link in the room, so anyone who's in the room could actually go to that particular section and read along with us. Still getting over, there's a lot of mixed messages going on about this election, and still, you know, it's not done yet. I know a lot of people are really banking on, you know, perhaps the Electoral College may find some some sense or make some sense and decide that they aren't going to vote for who they're supposed to vote for. But I don't think that's very likely. What do you think about that, Bruce?
Well, you know, I just figure it all is a great classroom for looking at my unconscious projections. And as long as I'm choosing the ego, I'm voting on the electoral kindergarten and or nursery school or basically there's no maturity, no sanity, and no because that thought system is completely insane. So when I see things in the world that remind me of that, it's basically a perfect opportunity to look at my condemnations, my judgments, my assessments and valuation of an insane thought system, and wanting to make that real, wanting to perpetuate insanity. And so, you know, but that isn't limited to just the political arena. It's everything in space and time, everything that has matter or energy and a temporal birth, ascendancy and death, is just basically a metaphor for the insane idea that we were able to separate from perfect oneness, that we somehow, again, you know, to retread an old metaphor, you know, we threw God under the bus and thought we pulled it off and drove off and left God by the side of the road to perish, you know. didn't call an ambulance or anything, just, you know, hit and run, you know. But that's crazy. I mean, because basically it's saying that our existence is predicated on a lie. And as long as we believe that, we're going to see lots of insane things. And sometimes they'll flare up, and sometimes they'll seem to, you know, to calm down. And that's the ego's game, is, you know, there's always a little carrot on the stick of, well, you know, so this election may or may not have turned out the way I liked it, but somebody else may have liked it, you know. So there's always something going on in the world that is going to be a perfect opportunity to either anchor us further
in a dream of imprisonment, or, you know, the other metaphor of a classroom of enlightenment. So
that's, yeah, and that's it. It's the whole, you know, what are you using it for? What is it for?
Right.
And you know, I look at this whole situation and have been since, you know, we kind of followed it, and I had problems. And upsets about the election, not because I really disliked or liked either one of the candidates, but because there was so much, so many lies that were being perpetrated through Facebook and through social media, and there were actually people who were just making up stories for the fun of it and putting them out there, and then other people were believing them and reposting, and so it looked to me like there was a lot of misleading stuff going on, and that was upsetting to me. Now, why was I upset about that? Because my virtues, I'm such a virtuous person that I'm going to be upset about the truth being stomped on, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality of it is, the ego just objects in general.
In general or in private or any rank in between, right?
any rank, the ego is going to protest or object.
Admiral, whatever. Colonel, doesn't matter. It'll pull rank and become very rank and offensive, yeah. No matter what.
Exactly.
offensive, defensive, whatever. It's a militant thought system, so it's gonna use every strategy it can to you know, send out the hungry dogs of fear and always find something to take an issue with.
Exactly. And so I was, you know, getting really upset about all that, and then the election came and then the election was over, and when it turned out that Trump was the one who actually won the Electoral College, although we're seeing obviously that it's not the entire election. A lot of people, more people, I guess, voted for Hillary. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, he somehow or the other prevailed, and a lot of people have a lot of reasons and ideas why that happened. And, you know, you can analyze that till the cows come home, and, you know, that's all that's going to do is get you a bunch of analysis. But the reality of it is that we now have someone who is going to be, you know, in what, you know, we consider a pretty important position, who, you know, I personally see as a con man. Mm-hmm. So, but I also recognized, and this came to me very, very clearly the night of the election, was how people who dislike Barack Obama, how disappointed they were when he was elected, how upset they were when he's been the president for this last 8 years, how they thought something else was going to happen and it didn't. And so they're all disappointed and upset. And, just suddenly being in those shoes, to be in those shoes where I'm fearful about what's going to happen and what this guy's going to do and everything. And I just saw how for the last 8 years, people who were afraid of Obama, who thought that he was doing the wrong thing, how they felt. And, when I suddenly got that inspiration, I guess, of this is how these people have been feeling all these years, no wonder they're so angry. No wonder they're so upset. Not because anything has gone wrong, because if you look around, you see, you know, that the economy is in better condition. Culturally, everything is so much better now than it was 8 years ago when Obama took over. But they're not seeing that at all. They're seeing that things have gotten worse and worse and worse. So it's just a matter of perspective. And I found myself in a place where my perspective was being hijacked by these thoughts of fear. And, you know, suddenly my perspective was, you know, things can go wrong. Bad things are happening. And I saw how frightening that could be. Mm-hmm. And especially if you don't have some kind of a guide to help you see, you know, what's going on, what really is the purpose. And so, you know, it's really silly for me, a person who does have a guide, a person who does have a direction, to be, you know, running off in terror. You know, it's up to me to help pull this together and bring about some sort of peace and remind myself and my brothers of our own joyful experience here, rather than, you know, being in fear. So, you know, I see our job now as whatever you want to call us, miracle workers, teachers of God, light workers, whatever. Our job is to really prevent the fear, to do everything we can to not make our brothers fearful. And, you know, I saw myself doing a lot of making people fearful by all my accusations. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, not because I don't know, you know, the truth is not apparent to the ego mind. So I don't really know what the truth is. And I don't really know what anything is for. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in fact, the truth is completely invisible and unreachable by the ego mind. And I think that's a big clue right there, is that whenever we're not at peace, whenever we lapse into fear, and I, like you, spent, I think about a day and a half, mostly, you know, kind of recoiling from the results of the election. And we were talking about that in our Castle Rock study group here, Monday evening. And how, you know, there's an opportunity to look at that. But sometimes we are so comfortable with our preconceptions and our hidden, issues and our hidden, concerns and wants and wishes and desires to make the world work, that it's really only when something like this exposes the unresolved and the unaddressed aspects, metaphorically, of you know, the common middle America, you know, whatever, regardless of what, you know, political analysis or demographics, you know, expertise numerical. listening to the pundits and all that sort of thing, no matter what you believe about what the cause of the outcome of the election was, I think one can easily say that there was, like, as you were pointing out, there's a lot of people that felt unlistened to and that their issues weren't being addressed. And I think that's indicative of a bigger thought system, that if we leave anyone out, which politics invariably does, no matter how you slice it or dice it, because it's a slicing and dicing proposition to make persons out of oneness. And persons obviously always have issues. So, and I was just kind of, you know, chuckling a moment ago when you said, I'm a person who has a guide, something like that. But in a sense, as persons, we are guideless. As persons, we're clueless and hopeless. But as, and that's why I think A Course in Miracles is such a brilliant document, because it without necessarily explicitly in too many places, but consistently brings us back to the decision-making faculty of the mind, which is not a person. What we are, not who we are, but what we are, is a being that is all-inclusive, and contains and embraces everyone and everything, and there's no factions, there's no parties, there's no divisiveness, because how could perfect oneness have an opposite or a division or any kind of schism or split? You know, I think that's why one of my favorite skits from the Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian, is when they're sitting in the bleachers of the Colosseum and one guy comes along and says, I'm with the People's Front of Judea, you know, and then the other group says, no, we're the Judean People's Front, or vice versa, you know, and then they all yell splitter, you know, so I'm paraphrasing that greatly, but that's kind of the humor in that, is that, you know, the differences that we make such big deals about, are trivial when we really look at the big picture. And I think sometimes
You find, you know, when there's, you know, catastrophes in certain areas, people come together, whether it's a tsunami, an earthquake, or something like that, and you realize, you know, even on that scale, on the level of form, it takes sometimes something like that to shake things up for people. It doesn't have to, but that's usually, you know, the back against the wall strategy of everyone's ego is, you know, continue to work with the what's in it for me paradigm, the we, they paradigm of personhood until, you know, it becomes so unbearable that you try something else. And I think that's why, you know, somewhere in the text, I think it says, you know, our tolerance for pain may be high, but it's not without limit. You know, there is a point at which we say, okay, enough already. And I think Helen and Bill, you know, reached that in their relationship when they said, you know, there must be a better way, you know, because they were, you know, at each other's throats, you know, certainly in private, maybe not publicly, but from what the accounts that we've heard, you know, but I think that's, if we look at the contents of our minds, we realize, wow, how many people in my mind have I disenfranchised when I think of, you know, the people who may have voted differently than I as the other, you know, and it's, I think it's a great lesson there to look at that stuff and realize, you know, like our workbook lesson that I've been doing sequentially again, you know, I gladly make the sacrifice of fear, you know, and if we're afraid of outcomes, we're saying the dream is real. And it's okay to, you know, to, if you catch yourself for a day or a week or a century, but you know, eventually, you know, we're going to tire of the tyranny of the fear that is the ego's bread and butter, which it, you know, it sprinkles with like flowers in the desert, you know, and it sprinkles it with occasional little moments of respite, but they're always, you know, little euphoric fake solutions, you know, that whether it's, you know, a bonus at Christmas time or an orgasm or a sudden promotion or you get to move to a different part of the country or you suddenly get a reprieve, in some, you know, somebody says, I let go of, you know, an issue and, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's basically, if you really look at the times in our life that we're really truly happy, it has nothing to do with the circumstances, but we like to think it is because that's the ego's whole strategy is all, you know, hold innocence to myself, but project everything but that to the world outside me so that I become the victim. But victimhood never really is an effective, strategy, whether you're the victimizer or the apparent victimizer or the apparent victim in a crazy dream, huh? So, well, I've been rattling for a while.
Oh, no, but it's true. I mean, what you're saying is absolutely correct. And so, you know, I guess the question that we have to ask ourselves is, you know, what is my purpose? And, you know, what am I doing here? Is it, you know, am I here to make the wheels go round and round? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or is there something entirely different that I'm supposed to be doing here? And, you know, you and I both have our own marching directions from a book called A Course in Miracles that pretty much tells us if you selected this and you decided that this is your path, mm-hmm. then here's what you need to do.
Right. Right.
And it's very clear.
That's our guide. That's our guide, isn't it? And yeah. I think that ties into the frequently asked question that we've got in front of us here. Shall I start reading the first paragraph?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. This is again from facimoutreach.org, the question and answer sections, and we're at number 1247 today. It starts out, I have become aware that the helpful yet needy relationship I have been developing with Jesus as teacher, friend, guide, there's that word guide, elder brother, comforter, is changing to something that I would like to try to describe. My question is whether this is a normal part of the process of learning and growing toward the goals, in parentheses, of A Course in Miracles. Rather than representing solely the above roles, I now seem to grasp that Jesus is a symbol that is not at all specific or limited. I sense that the content of the right mind is really a reflection of what I denied when the so-called dream of separation began, and like its source, the abstract content of the right mind merely is. How about if I read the second paragraph too? Still there, Lou?
Oh, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, because that way it'll kind of have the whole continuity of the
question. Yeah, more continuity, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Therefore, I can better understand that Jesus or the Holy Spirit really do nothing. Somehow, in some way that I do not understand, my mind opens a little and allows or accepts some experience of what we call truth, love, peace, atonement. And it is that experience, the miracle, in quotes, or in parentheses, that corrects and cancels out my errors in perception if I sincerely desire to let them go. What I am recognizing is that I am the one doing all the work, that my progress is really up to me, and I am more aware of the meaning of, quote, a little willingness, unquote, to take responsibility when choosing my ego. Somewhere in your writings or tapes, there is something about eventually growing up in our dependent relationship with our elder brother Jesus. What do you make of the seeming change in my needy relationship with Jesus? I'm not just trying to kick him out again, am I? A lot of things going on there in that question, aren't there?
Great question. Sometimes I think, you know, I don't think I've ever thought this actually, but I can see how people read like lesson 189, where there's that beautiful paragraph that says, you know, let go of everything you think you know, put down this world, put down this course, and come with holy empty hands to your God. People think, oh, well, okay, now I need to put the course down. And they forgot about the part about, you know, put down this world, you know, stop, let go of everything you ever believed. Right. You know, they're just ready to jump out and, you know, let's put the course down now. And that's what I see with this kind of a question too.
I just looked it up. It's paragraph 7 of lesson 189, which goes, simply do this. In fact, we actually read this very frequently. I should say Terry Miller, who's in our Wednesday online study group, she typically will read this, or one of the actually, there's another one, I think, in the lesson before this that she reads a lot, as a closing meditation. Simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is, all concepts you have learned about the world, all images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, or good or bad. Sounds like political, huh? just for example. Of every thought it judges worthy, and all the thoughts, all the ideas of which it is ashamed. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. Forget this world, forget this course, and come with holy empty hands unto your God. And I think that's the couple of comments that come to mind reading that, just because I've heard it so many times, and it's such a great meditation, you know, it's basically, I think this is really a kind of a description of the last step that God takes, you know, because I don't think we're ever going to really let go of the world completely until we just finally exhaust all the options and all the different illusion variations that we think there's got to be one illusion situation or complex of combinations of illusory states that is going to make us happy. And finally, you know, we maybe on a holographic level exhaust them all and say, okay, now it's time. And that's what we call enlightenment, you know, and we take that step to the threshold, and then God takes the final step. So I think that's a kind of a description of you know, a way to both get there, as well as, not that we have to get anywhere, but as well as a description of what happens when we, you know, when God does take the final step. And also, and I think there's a big clue there. It starts out, the last sentence starts out, forget this world, forget this course. And obviously, it may not be crucial, but I think the sequence is sort of a nice hint, is if you forget the world, then you have no need of the course, you know?
Right.
So, but most of the time, we're still hanging on to the world with tooth, nail, and whatever else we can strap, you know, identity onto it with, you know, pretty solidly.
if we were honest with ourselves, and just, it's okay to look at that and just smile and say, okay, well, yeah, I'm pretty darn invested in, you know, making sure that, you know, there's a 20-foot U-Haul available on the morning of the 30th and that the guys that I've hired to, you know, come out and help us load the heavy stuff are going to show up on time and that, you know, the roads are going to be passable over the next 3 days and yada, yada. You know, you just hear your mind going through all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, all the funds and the escrows, you know, get to where they need to be. And, you know, I mean, just for example, just using a personal example, you know, so, but it's just fun to just kind of watch one's investment and all the different outcomes in the world and say, these are things I hope will happen. And I've done everything I can to, you know, ensure that, but just watch the we, they, thinking run amok. And it isn't always necessarily too obvious. It's like, well, as long as I'm happy, then I don't care as much as if everyone else gets all their needs met. And but that's politics, isn't it? I mean, that's just the whole craziness of that insane thought system, isn't it?
It is. It is the same thing. And so this questioner is saying, you know, I have this needy relationship with Jesus, and you know, I really need him, but I really just, you know, I'm thinking I'm getting to the point where I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. It's hugely dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hugely dangerous because, you know, unless you know, you know, unless if you're asking a question like this, if you're even asking the question, then you don't know. And so if you don't know, then that's exactly the void where ego just jumps in with all of its story, strength, and might.
Uh-huh.
And says, oh, yeah, you're okay. You can, you know, forget about this Jesus guy. And, you know, you've got me to listen to now, and I can help you. And and sure enough, it's always there. It's always there to lend a helping hand. But, you know, if I can just recognize that, you know, the advisor that I'm choosing once again is not helpful to me and is actually going to give me advice that's going to end up causing me more suffering. So, you know, I'm not ready to let go of Jesus' hand for a long time, and or Holy Spirit or whatever you want to call it. Now, I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying at this very moment, I don't see my mind as being clear enough to make these decisions. You know, I can look at it and decide, yep, that's ego thought and I don't want to deal with it. I'm not going to follow it. I'm not going to do what it's telling me. But the reality of it is, still 99% of the time I do exactly what the ego tells me to do because that's my life support system. That's what I've known my whole life. And, you know, just because I know and have, Jesus and A Course in Miracles, you know, I have not actually given up my will to that. Mm-hmm. So if I can't give up my will to Jesus, then, you know, what makes me think I can give up my will to nothing? Right. You know, it's just, or to my own thoughts. It's not possible. Or it is possible, but I'm not going to get where I need to go. So I'm going to start reading. Unless you have more comments on that, please.
Just one brief one. Somehow that reminds me of the, you know, trust not your good intentions, but you can implicitly trust your willingness, because that willingness is, you know, our guide. That's that willingness to see things differently and to let go of our condemnations of ourself and each other. Is really the little willingness that we, the spark that we fan into the flame of you know, the bonfire of the abundant willingness that it talks about later in the course, that is basically, you know, it's really just the more we practice looking at how ego strategy hasn't been working for us, and just honestly saying, that has not made me happy one little bit, and just really be honest with that, you know, just and see how, you know, devastating an outcome. It's you know, relying only on that thought system, you know, is really, we can project it out. You know, it's like there's nothing there. It's not evil, sinful, or wicked as Ken Wapnick says so beautifully. It's just silly. Why would we invest in a movie, a dream, a metaphor that doesn't work for us? But, you know, but that's why we need that guide. And that's why the guidance that we all have and we all can rely on 24/7 and all and vote for metaphorically, instead of the partisan insanity of duality and separation. That's why that guide is so crucial, and then it kind of ties back into this answer, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
And so, really, yeah, why give up what I know is helping me to get where I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
So it's silly, and I like that word silly, and I think I'm going to start using that word silly instead of stupid. Which it means the same thing to me, but people react poorly to the word stupid, but silly, you know, they also react poorly to the word silly, but, you know, they don't think, you know, I mean, they know you're saying they're stupid. But
yeah, I think the idea is if we can look lovingly with gentleness and kindness on a decision that we all made to identify with our personas and our bodies and the seemingly separate self that we take as such, you know, gospel and in our unchallenged assumptions about the world. But when we really start looking at it, it's like, it's hysterically funny. And I think that's why, you know, when I was in Estes Park, early last summer, or was it late last spring? Anyway, in June, and did a little, workshop for about an hour, a little over an hour on the humor in the course. Cause I think Jesus has an incredible sense of humor and tries to get us to see that it's just hilarious. I mean, not in any kind of, you know, put down sort of way, but just in the sense that why would we do that when we see from above the battleground that there's a beautifully peaceful, eternally peaceful, consistently peaceful, option that we haven't exercised yet.
Yeah. Exactly. And strangely enough, when you use that option, it does actually work.
Yeah.
It's not like you're hoping and wishing. It actually does work, but you have to actually use the option too. And that's where I see the willingness that comes in is by, you know, giving it a chance recognizing, okay, if I can forgive and this can be over, you know, I can actually let go of this. But, you know, as much as I will say that and ask Jesus, oh, help me let go of this, until I actually am ready to let go of it, I'm going to hold on to it. And that includes any kind of way in which I'm, looking at a brother and thinking that they are, that they're not thinking correctly or, you know, maybe they're being silly or stupid. You know, as long as I still want to believe that, which is really the problem, is my desire to believe it. Right. It's not because it's a lie. You know, I can look at, you know, you can tell me the sky is pink. And, you know, I can look at that and say, well, you know, in my opinion, it's blue, but that's my thought because that's what blue looks like to me. But, you know, if you want to believe, if I wanted to believe the sky was pink, then I would look for every proof that it was, you know, everything that would say that it was or that, you know, well, it's really close. The wavelength is, you know, 45.9992 and, you know, the wavelength of pink is 44.99993. So it's just like one billionth of a thing different. It's not really different at all. You know, I could come up with all kinds of reasons why, why the sky is pink. If that's what I want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's what I want to believe. And if I want to believe that, you're bad or doing me wrong or, I'm going to believe it no matter what you do to prove it. And until I really want to see it things differently, that's why we have these incredible lessons that they say things like, I want to see things differently. Vision is a gift. You know, it is the seeing that brings about the change.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't want to see, do I want to see what I denied because it was the truth? Last unanswered question right there. Do I want peace? You know, it really is. It's all about seeing and my decision to see. And right now I'm not ready. There's a song that some kind of country western song, something like I still want to be mad tonight. You know, I know it's wrong. I know I shouldn't be. I know it's not helpful, but I just want to be mad. And that's it. Ego, I just want to be mad.
Yeah. And that awareness then can be a hugely helpful thing. It's when you recognize that it is a conscious choice to be upset and to choose the pain of the belief in separation, which oftentimes manifests in physical symptoms, but it's a psychological process always. That recognition of that choice can be hugely helpful, as Ken Wapnick again says, that, you know, that once you have that information, it's like, wow, now you can realize that at any given moment when you're indulging in a masochistic choice, you can see that you think you're going to get some payoff, and you can watch the process. You can follow it through from cause to effect. You can see that it didn't make you happy, and use that to gently become a contributing factor in the ultimate decision to see, the ultimate decision to let go of the insanity, and to be gentle with yourself in the process, because we know that it's going to take some time, because we've invested an entire cosmology to reinforce a belief in separation. So it, you know, give yourself some slack. Now we don't have to wait for, you know, the universe of space time to run its course, because there's nothing to run its course. But we do need to be patient with ourselves when we have, for example, a day and a half of, in my case, of looking at, you know, the craziness that happened a couple of weeks ago, and say, wow, you know, what am I going to do now? And like you say, all the fearful stuff. But then catch yourself saying, okay, I'm going to give myself however long I need to grieve over this apparent outcome. And that can be anything. It can be, you know, missing a pulling up to an intersection right when the light turns red, you know, I'm going to be, you know, 30 seconds later, or whatever, you know, big deal. But there's some things that we think are big deals. And so when we can, you know, ask ourselves, do I really want to make a big deal out of this? And we at least temporarily say to ourselves, the answer is yes. We can see that it's a decision-making process, and that gives us a greater and greater identity to the mind, which ultimately is our release.
Exactly. And to do it, the key to all of this is to do it without guilt.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. the guilt, really, that right. cements the thought.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if I get caught up in it, I start believing that I'm guilty, and then, you know, I look for other reasons for why I'm guilty. I see other situations where I've done the same thing, and, you know, I'm all screwed up. There's something wrong with me. All that guilt is really the thing that causes the actual problem. So
right.
If I look at it, that's why looking at it with your inner kindness guide or Jesus or the Holy Spirit or whomever you choose to look at with you, having that other consciousness involved in the looking. And it's not because it's a consciousness that's outside of yourself. It's like, it's your own higher self. It's your own inner teacher. It's your own consciousness that is looking at this and noticing, recognizing that there is no guilt. Nothing has actually gone wrong. See, mm-hmm. guilt comes from the belief that something has gone wrong. And so just getting to that point where, you know, I recognize, and again, I have to bring this up because I'm seeing it now as I'm going through the course again with deeper study. The idea that the script is written really is the key to all of this. The knowing that Donald Trump was going to be elected, that was just the script. It has nothing to do with any personal being, any personal thought. It has nothing to do with anything you or I did or didn't do. That's in the script. And so you know, the script wasn't written so that we could all have a great time and everybody could go to the teddy bear picnic. The script was written so that we could see the foolishness of attempting to live without love, the foolishness of trying to make a world without God. That's the purpose of the script. So of course the script is going to elect Donald Trump. Of course the script is going to, you know, have wars all over the world. Of course the script is going to have starvation and pain and suffering and disease and of course the script is going to have flowers and butterflies and sunsets and babies and all those things, because there has to be this contrast in order for the script to appear real, in order for that matrix to have the grounding and holding ability to capture my attention. So that's the purpose of the script. The script is written that all the things that are happening are basically, we have nothing, we can't change the script. All the only thing that we can do is change our mind about the script. And there is there are levels to the script. And I believe this, and you know, this, other people may have a different opinion, but from what I've read in the course, it appears that when I choose to forgive, when I choose to let go of my focus of attention on the script, and instead focus my attention on my own holy being, my brothers and myself as the holy sons of God, and the Christ mind, when I focus my attention on that, I move into a different, maybe different script, maybe the same script, and it's just I'm living on a different level, in which I'm not seeing all these things as being problems. I'm recognizing that what appeared to be a problem with a certain person being elected was just another page in the story, you know, and I'm going to turn the page and there's going to be another page, and I'm going to keep turning the pages and there's going to be more and more and more stories, all basically the same thing. You know, I see something I want, I think that is good, I go for it, I receive it, and it turns out not to be good, or I go for it and I don't receive it, and I get upset. You know, they're all branches of the same script, and it all has to do with my purpose, my mind, my desire, my thinking. So really, switching that is what changes everything.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just a choice of thought system.
Exactly. So I'll go on to start reading the answer.
Okay.
What you describe, and to remind people, the person is asking, you know, am I ready? Basically, I don't want to be hooked on Jesus like I was been hooked on the ego thought system. And so I want to kick that dependency and go on to being my own holy self, skipping many steps, in my opinion. This question.
Even the word "my own" can be a clue right there, right?
Exactly. I know how to do the work. Can I go home and take my books home and do my homework while I'm playing Nintendo? You know, that's kind of what we're asking Jesus.
I call it no entiendo.
No entiendo. Yes, exactly. The answer, what you describe seems to be the natural transition that should take place. The spiritual path of A Course in Miracles is a journey leading us back to the oneness of perfect love that we believe we shattered by desiring our own special individualized experience. Therefore, any semblance of separation must eventually disappear in our minds if we are to regain our true identity as Christ and return home to God. Relating to Jesus as an older, wiser brother is a wonderful starting point on our journey. He even asked us to relate to him that way and learn how to trust him unconditionally, acknowledging that he knows what is best in our best interest, and we do not. At that level, we still see ourselves as separate from him and very much dependent on him. That is as it should be, but it's just the beginning stage of the relationship. And he does not want us to remain at that level of spiritual childhood. Really important. Really important.
Right.
You know, this part, yes, we do have to begin by looking for a teacher that we can trust. And, you know, a lot of people in the world are actually literally looking for a person, a mm-hmm. teacher mm-hmm. that they can trust. And, you know, really honestly, we're like infants in this way.
Right, right.
We really are children in this way.
Whether it's a guru or a political figure or an ideology or a book or, you know, if there's something external, that obviously is just a symbol of a thought system. But, you know, we apparently think we need those symbols. So it's just no different than any other magic thought. And the Course doesn't advise us to stop using magic. It just asks us to eventually, you know, recognize that eventually we are going to outgrow the need for those magic manifestations and recognize that it's really a choice in the mind, because it's the whole curriculum is about getting back to that awareness in our mind that doesn't change, that we never left, that is where the peace remains intact and unaffected by anything that we've appeared to have done in a dream. So I'll read the next paragraph. Okay. Thus at one point he says, I will teach you and live with you if you will think with me, but my goal will always be to absolve you finally from the need for a teacher. He wants us to become what he is, something he expresses early in the text. There is nothing about me that you cannot attain. I have nothing that does not come from God. The difference between us now is that I have nothing else. This leaves me in a state which is only potential in you. I am in the brackets, no way separate or different from you except in time. And time does not really exist. And then there's several references in there in chapter one. And near the end of the workbook, he speaks very movingly of our oneness with him. Yet in the final days of this 1 year we gave to God together, you and I, we found a single purpose that we shared. And thus you join with me. So what I am, are you as well. And that's the shared identity. That's the shared awareness, the truth that is eternal, infinite, immortal, unchangeable, complete in its innocence and true glory and the loving kindness and the peace that we thought somehow we had forsaken. We thought we somehow had you know, given it up by investing in an identity that seemed to have space and time and bodies and personas and all that kind of stuff. And that individuality is just a hoax. It's a ruse. It's a game we're playing.
It is. And what I think is really helpful to me, too, is this. You said this shared interest. It is this shared interest. And when I recognize that it doesn't matter what you appear to be doing, how you appear to be acting or reacting, who you voted for, who you didn't like, what none of those things matter. You know, I go back to Marshall Rosenberg and the nonviolent communication, mm-hmm. where, you know, the basis for nonviolent communication is that we come together based on our shared needs. That we all need the same things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the same thing as a shared interest. In the Manual for Teachers, Jesus says that a teacher of God is one who is at any time during their lifetime, realized that their interests and another's were the same, mm-hmm. that we share the same interest. And so when I look at another person, you know, external to myself, and I look only for the differences between us, I think this is so important to me. This is something I've learned actually from the Oneness Blessing, actually, is that if I'm looking and I'm only looking for our shared interests, the things that you and I all need, all want, if I'm only looking for that, then I'm going to find plenty of things that are going to connect me to you. plenty of things in which I want to cheer you on, help you, support you, and you are going to do the same thing with me because we are sharing now our cause, our needs, and so when we're able to do that, we learn to relate to each other. And when you relate to each other, you cannot help but love each other. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge leap to go from, you and I have the same needs. You and I share the same interests. You and I want the same thing. And let me look for the sameness in our desires and our work. And, you know, we all want peace. We all want, prosperity. We all want security. We all want, relationships. You know, these are all shared things that, you know, no matter how vile a person may seem to be, from your personal judgment, if you sit down and talk to them or listen to them, actually listen, ask them, you know, why do you think that Donald Trump is the best? And truly listen. And as you're listening, instead of listening for, here's how you and I are different, listen for, yeah, I want that too. Mm-hmm. The thing that you're telling me is the same thing I want.
Right, right. Those calls for love can take very strange, bizarre forms. But then so are all the forms that all of us express. You know, the strange, bizarre form that we've all invested in and voted for is space and time and bodies and personas and individuality as a strategy to find peace, which is, you know, doomed, of course. But recognizing that we all in truth have the shared interest of the atonement, which is recognizing that we never were separate, and that the one truly shared interest is really that we want to return to that awareness. That's huge. And we can practice that every day, moment to moment, with family, with friends, with neighbors, with people on Facebook or on the phone or that we, you know, listen to on TV or on web or, you know, wherever we come into contact with things that appear to be different, in terms of opinions and values and beliefs, just recognize that, wow, that there's an opportunity to return to the guide that this FAQ is talking about, that we can, mature and evolve in our awareness from the idea of separation to gradually letting go of that insane concept more and more and more by returning to the mind, seeing that that hasn't worked for us, and, you know, finding a better way, choosing another thought system that does acknowledge without any effort at all, because that's the truth. There's really no effort in acknowledging the oneness that we all share, but it takes a tremendous effort. As my friend Leonard Lasko says, it takes enormous energy to maintain the belief in separation. You know,
yes.
And I think that's, sometimes we forget that that's an exhausting process. I mean, we're all fighting that hard battle of trying to keep oneness apart from itself. You know, it's like,
exactly.
That's pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean,
it is crazy. It is crazy. And yet when you look at, you know, the things that for me, the things that I say and do, I see how I'm doing it and how painful it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every time I try to separate myself or segregate myself from a brother because, you know, you're a racist or a misogynist or, you know, you're whatever, you're the wrong color, you're the wrong gender, whatever it is that I think that you are, it's a lot of work to make up that story in my head, to find evidence for that story to be true, mm-hmm. and to actually literally attempt to separate myself from you. And the thing that I guess, you know, is left out of this little equation is that every time I do that, I know that it's not right.
Right.
I know that that's not the truth. And because I know that it's not the truth, I know that that I'm doing something that is against my own basic being principles, then there comes up this thing called cognitive dissonance, mm-hmm. that says I'm thinking one thing and I'm doing something else, and that brings about guilt.
Yeah, and that guilt is overwhelming until we start looking at it and gently saying, I don't have to do that anymore. But if, as we begin to identify with the guide that we thought was somebody external, which this FAQ addresses, and realize that it's our own awareness that we took with us into the dream, that we've symbolized as an emissary such as Jesus or Buddha or you know, whatever popular contemporary teacher or whatever seems to represent aspects of that awareness to us, doesn't matter. I mean, that guide that we took with us will give us the strength to look at the everyday things that we do that are crazy making for ourselves and the people we live with, both under the same roof or on the same planet. And I find that if as you're saying that, I was thinking, well, gee, over the years I've noticed that just with my wife, for example, I've noticed that I do less and less things that bug her when I catch myself about to do that, and then I recognize the thought behind it is, oh, I'm asserting some sort of individuality. Again, it's like I have a separate interest.
Yes.
When I want to do it my way, and watching how much misery that's made, and how it almost literally destroyed the relationship that we have. And then this past year, I think we both had a recognition and a revelation, even though she doesn't avow or profess to be a course student. We both, relate to the idea of mindfulness very, very readily. And I think it became an obvious choice that we were choosing, to be upset with each other and to make little things important over the importance of the shared interest. And then when we realized that we were doing that, it was like, well, that's silly. And then so I think it's been helpful for me to basically enlist the support of my life partner and the level of form to say, hey, if you see me doing something that's mindless, just try to be as gentle as you can, but firm and say, hey, I see, mindlessness going on and we have that agreement now. And I think it really helps. So when I catch myself rearranging something in the house or doing something that I think might be upsetting, just say, okay, what am I going to get out of this? What am I going to,
right.
And that's, I think we could extend that to the political process. I mean, it's because mm-hmm. it's all politics. It's all, in the world, it's all about trying to repair a dream that we know has gone terribly wrong. We know is never going to work for us, but it's so invested in the outcome of little trivial things and a little speck of the cosmos that we call planet Earth and thinking, and obviously on a level of form, rightly so, that those things make a difference. But in truth, they never existed. So how could they make a difference to what we really are? So I think that's,
exactly.
Again, that cosmic awareness that we're learning on a very specific level and using those specifics from our guide to bring ourselves back to that mindful awareness of the choice for peace, the choice for the atonement that is really our only responsibility.
Absolutely. And wow, what a beautiful partnership that you have.
It's always a work in progress, but, yeah. There are moments where it's more mindful and it's like, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah. So I have the same thing. And my husband doesn't study the course. My husband back in the 70s, probably 1976 or 77, I don't know, we read a book called Be Here, Remember Be Here Now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
By Baba Ram Dass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He believed that. He took that on as his life, and he lives that. Okay, so and so, it doesn't matter what kind of craziness I go off into. If I'm in his presence and I start off with anything, he'll just be like, "Lynn, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Just be here."
Exactly.
And completely, okay, you're right, duh, what am I doing? But, I mean, it's pissed me off before, too, but now I'm just like, oh, thank you, because I recognize it's not him. He's not trying to dominate me in any way. He's not trying to, tell me what to do. He's just reminding me, remember, this is what you live your life for. Why would you, be going off into this? Another thing that I see as being extremely important for us as, of course, as miracle workers, as we are, you and I, teachers of God,
all of us,
is to do whatever we can to not promote fear. That comes from within as well, because, I'm only going to promote fear if I'm in fear. And so, you know, if I'm going around, you know, making all kind of dire predictions and warnings and, you know, oh, be careful or watch out or this bad thing is happening or look at what happened, look what he said, look what he did. You know what? I'm promoting fear not only in my own self, but into the world as well. And, I realized I posted something on Facebook this morning that's just that very thing, and I'm going to go take it off when we're done here because, you know, I recognize, you know, why would I do anything to promote fear? So that's, you know, lovingness, even though we're kind of off, not really off the topic, but, because it is really about what is that inner teacher doing for you? What is Jesus doing for us? How is our relationship to our inner guide, our teacher, how is that affecting my life? And am I ready to give that up? Never. As long as I'm living in this world, I don't think that I'll ever be able to give that up because it isn't a separate being, a Jesus outside of me. It is my own true self.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's really, you know, giving me all this advice and just, you know, saying to me, remember, we're here now. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And the microcosm and the macrocosm are equally represented in everything that we do because space and dimension and magnitude, anything that has to do with differences are all part of the illusion, aren't they? I mean, so it doesn't really matter if it's a national or a global political issue or if it's just, household bickering, you know, it's all, an opportunity to go from prison to classroom in our mind. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And thank God. I'm so grateful for that. So let's continue with the question. I think we're on paragraph 3 of the answer. So a parallel to this is found in his description of prayer as a ladder. See the Song of Prayer pamphlet. The bottom rungs of the ladder are marked by our pleas for help and our needs and problems. But as we find ourselves attracted to the loving source, with a capital S, of all the answers, our perception of what we think we need changes. Now, we grow increasingly vigilant for what stands in the way of our experiencing that love all the time. This is exactly what we're talking about here. With all of our seeming problems fading in significance, now we recognize that our only need is to awaken from the dream of separation. Quote, the only real need to be fulfilled in time. Chapter 13 talks about that quite a bit, apparently. We should be careful, though, not to skip steps and pretend that we are on the higher rungs of the spiritual ladder when we are not. It is humbling indeed to be told that we are in the infancy stage of salvation. It's true. Mm-hmm. Jesus tells us in chapter 19. But that humility is required if we are going to hear the answer to our call for help. And it's so true. You get like what my mom used to say, too big for your britches. Mm-hmm. You know,
we're all in mindfulness, you know, pre-nursery school, you know, and it's not the voting that we're doing with our thoughts is not in any kind of electoral college. It's a pre-nursery situation, you know, that we're in toddler infant daycare here as far as, you know, mastering the mindfulness that the course suggests. But that's okay. You know, that's actually encouraging in one sense, in that you know, when we start to lapse into the discouragement, depression, or despair, or whatever, seeing the devastation of the ego's craziness, we can actually take solace and great comfort in the idea that we're seeing, from the bottom of the ladder, that's always such a great clue, is whenever I feel the least bit victimized, or at the mercy of anything that seems to be outside of myself, I love how Ken reminds us that you know, that's a clue that you're back in the dumpster, you know, and rather than trying to wallpaper it, you know, just the thing to do is just get back on the ladder and climb out, you know, and just to recognize that at any time that I'm feeling the least bit out of harmony or peace with that inner guidance, that means that I'm choosing to see specifics as more important than the generalized understanding that the course is leading us back to, that gets us up the ladder again and above the battleground and, you know, mixing the metaphors again.
I like that though. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Because it's really only from that loftier perspective that's inclusive when our identity is just this little self that's in the dumpster that doesn't have anyone else there, you know, it's very lonely. But then when we start including other people, including those that have different political views, on a national scale or including on a global scale, those from different countries or traditions or races, religions, gender orientations, fill in the blanks, you know, it doesn't matter if we can recognize that we're all wanting the same peace, you know, whether it's a household or cosmic level. That is hugely helpful because it gives us the opportunity to see everyone as our friend. And even if the behavior and the form is something that radio show on KPFA out of Berkeley, California, called The Visionary Activist. Caroline Casey has been doing this show for many years. And I quoted her in my second book, actually, the Geometry Code. And I ran the quote past her, and she corrected it before it went to print. But I'm going to paraphrase it again because I don't have it in front of me. But it's basically I'm the friend of what you really are. But sometimes I will be the enemy of your behavior. And I think that can be really helpful. It says we don't have to vote on the level of form for things that we don't feel are contributory to, you know, the shared interests and the peace that, you know, we think from our limited perspective, is going to be helpful. But at the same time, there's the firm and unyielding acknowledgement that what we really want is the same. You know, if like the Song of Prayer says, you know, the secret of true prayer is to forget the things you think you need, then that's a reminder that what I think I need and what you think you need obviously are going to appear to be different because we think we're different people. We're so identified with our personhood that there's no way that those can be compatible with any two people. However, in truth, the what we are is so lofty and so completely unified and never had any fragmentation at all except in a dream, that on that level our needs truly are the same, and our need here really, as it points out, is only to return hand in hand together to the oneness that we never left.
Exactly. And it's actually going back. I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, you know, the needs I have are so complex. Why? Because I have made myself into a very complex person. I've given myself a complex personality and a complex body and a complex scenario. You know, I've made all these, you know, complexities in my life. And as I've done that, I've added layers upon layers upon layers upon layers of wants and needs and preferences and how does this complex being exist in this world? And you know, if you go back, like even in your lifetime, go back and look at what did I need when I was 17? You know, what did I need when I was 30? What did I need when I was, you know, 6 years old? What did I need when I was first born? You know, going back and back and back and looking at all the levels of need that I've developed because of this perception of myself as a separate person. You know, just to make a little example. So, you know, you look at me, 5 years ago, farther than that, when I was working, I was, you know, dressed in blue jeans and wore work boots and wore a hard hat. And I had all this was part of my identity, right? This was my identity. And I expected people to treat me. I was a professional person. People treat me this way. A woman out there working in construction with all these men. You know, this was an identity that, you know, I had all these, and all the needs that I had were based on that identity. You know, you know, all the things I was thinking about, you know, my future, my, you know, my life were based on that identity. But now I'm a much, much different person. I mean, it's like I'm a completely different identity has emerged, you know, which now, you know, I'm studying and teaching this incredible religious thing and, you know, I'm dressing in, you know, long skirts and dresses and, you know, I have a whole completely different identity now with whole completely different needs now. And, you know, and yet, what really has changed about what my real needs are? What has really changed from the needs I had day one when I was first born? You know, I needed to breathe, eat, you know, poop, be kept warm. I mean, really, basically, that's all, the only thing that this body needs.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rest of it are wants. All the rest of it are ideas. All the rest of it are concepts. All the rest of it are these complexities of personality that have become in my mind needs. You know, I need to have a new white skirt. You know, I need to get a new jacket. I need to go to Denver to this meeting. You know, they're not really needs. They're just ideas, parts of my complexity. So, you know, I'm getting to a point here with this, I think. All those things are the things that I'm seeing as being different between you and me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, he's a biker and he's got a bunch of tattoos and pierced all over. So not necessarily, I don't know how to relate to him. Or even worse than that, you know, he's a black person. I have no idea what his life is. I don't know how to relate to him. And therefore, you know, my best bet is to avoid him. You know, these are the things that come up because of our belief in those differences, that if you strip them all down, there's only all we're all the same. Our needs are all the same. And so if I stop looking at the picture, the costume that you put on, and the costume that I make up when I look at that, because, you know, you could just be, you know, the gentlest person in the world and look like, you know, an evil thug that's gonna, you know, strangle me. I have no idea, but I give that to you. I make that up in my mind based on what I see, my own complexity. So I guess, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, when you strip it all down and you recognize, you know, that, you know, they all have, we're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
And just because we're pretending to be different doesn't make it so. It's not possible.
Yeah. And the arc of peace is entered two by two. You know, it's basically whenever we join with any seeming other and recognize the shared interest, then we're on that voyage back to where we never left. You know, we're taking the forgiveness cruise, and it's a luxury cruise that we all have access to, but we have to consciously board that vessel every time we catch ourselves wanting to make a big deal over differences. And I thought of a little pun a few moments ago when you were talking about ethnic things. I was thinking, well, there's the word Hispanic. Well, his panic is my panic because it's my projection, right? So I mean, it doesn't matter what the apparent cultural or genetic or you know, geographic whatever makeup or heredity is. It has nothing to do with truth, because that is just a specific that we've chosen to make big deals out of, and when in truth there are no big deals about anything that happened or seemed to happen in form. Shall I read the next paragraph?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Spiritual maturity on the Course's path involves a recognition at some point that Jesus is really a symbol of the contents in our right mind that we have split off. There's that word symbol again. Because of this dissociation, our only access to our right minds usually is to first relate to Jesus as a person like us, a loving brother devoted to teaching and helping us. As we allow him to show us that we have been wrong about everything, especially about who we think we are, we begin to realize that everything is going on only in our minds. which means that we begin to realize, relate to everything as symbols of the choice we have made in our minds to identify with separation as reality or with oneness as reality. There's those two thought systems again. Our experience of both, Jesus and ourselves, will then change. Now, obviously, they have to fuse into one thing eventually, right? Because how could we be apart from Jesus or anyone else in perfect oneness? Right? We must gradually move beyond the perception of separate bodies relating to one another, or we will remain asleep and dreaming, living as aliens in a world that is not our home. I'm just thinking of an example. Occasionally, I'll notice this is I've been going to a study group here in Castle Rock, Colorado, for a better part of 5 years now. Actually, maybe a little more than that. In the last year, most of which was been done remotely, and I'll continue to do that. But every once in a while, we get involved in these wonderful discussions, and we kind of I'll speak for myself. Sometimes I forget. You know, the personas involved, even though we're using those to have the conversation. Well, like right now, for example. And then when we leave the room that we have at the library down the hill here, and I start looking at the bodies of the people in the study group, and then I realize, oh, I really wasn't paying much attention to the bodily aspect of the people I was relating with the past hour. But it's kind of interesting when you catch yourself and you see, oh, yeah, it's really the spirit that's communicating, and it's taking the form of these seeming individuals that seem to move around in space and time, but they're all part of my projection. And each of us can make that same statement in full accuracy. Huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if that's the case, then we can recognize that nobody is who they seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is who we're seeing. We're,
yes.
The thing that is being projected is not them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jesus tells us so many times, you know, he says in chapter 31, if you could just see one brother as being worthy of wholly worthy of forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
it will completely shift the way that you see things.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do is look at one brother and recognize that he is not what he seems to be.
Yeah, it's just a rephrasing or another way of sharing what Gary Renard's teachers and his Fearless Love audio suggest as an exercise of to see all of spirit in everyone and not just part of it. And I think that can be really helpful is when we, you know, catch ourselves thinking, oh, well, this person has this limited awareness that's in this limited body and has this limited set of beliefs, values, and desires, and yada, yada, and recognize we're all obviously all in that same boat as individuals, but that's not what we are in truth. That seems to be who we are, but that's not what we are in truth. That's just an illusion that we have become so invested in that we just take it for granted that that's our identity. And yet, this curriculum gently but firmly leads us consistently back to the awareness that the what we are as one being could never have been forsaken or damaged or in any way shattered. So ultimately, our perception of the separate individuals becomes that classroom to get back to that oneness that we never left.
Exactly. And you know, what a beautiful classroom it is when you recognize that that's where you're at.
Uh-huh.
When you think that you're in hell, when you think you're in a world where just everywhere you looked things were falling apart and going wrong, then it can be terrifying. But when you start realizing that really this is a classroom, these people appear here are my classmates. They are my friends, and they have all chosen. Now, this is another thing I get from the teacher's manual. It talks about this quite a bit, actually, is that we all chose. We made a decision back at the very beginning when all this was being projected out, the tiny mad idea. We all chose to come together right now. We all chose to come together right here, right now, to bring awakening to the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is not something that, you know, we're here to suffer and be in hell. You know, you and I, we chose at the very beginning, and I'm not trying to make us special because, I think that it isn't individual person, you and I. I don't think there was an individual Bruce or an individual Lynn ever. From, you know, it hasn't been, mm-hmm. And I haven't been anybody else either. but the decision that we made as a whole, as a collective in the very beginning was that, all right, we're going to play this game. We're going to try this out. We're going to run through here. We're going to check this out. We're going to, you know, experience these experiences, but you know, there's going to be a time when it's going to be time to go home. And so we are going to come together in a way that's going to wake us all up so that we can go home. And, you know, you are conscious of that choice. I am conscious of that choice. You know, everyone I think who's in this room is conscious of that choice. And actually, everyone is conscious on some level of that choice. Mm-hmm. But we are the ones who have chosen at this time to bring about this spiritual Armageddon, I guess, basically the end of the world. That's what I'm working for, is the disappearance of the universe, the end of the world. And not because I hate the world or it's heinous to me or anything, is because it's not true. It's not real. It's not what we are. And so, you know, I want to know what I denied because it was the truth. I want to remember that I'm one with God. I want to remember my own truth. And, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that on my own. I want you. I want everyone to come with me. I want us all to be awake and to recognize ourselves, know what we truly are, and go home. That's what I want. So that's why I do what I do. That's why you do what you do. And basically, that's why everyone does what they do on some level, whether they recognize it or not. So, you know, we're the dawnbreakers here. We're the ones here to, you know, ring the bell and, you know, get the cracks going so the light can come in. For Leonard Cohen there. One of my favorite Leonard Cohen songs. But yeah, that's where I see us. And so, you know, us doing this every week, everything that we do, it doesn't matter. The teaching is the being and remembering our oneness. That is the important thing.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what we're here to do, is to remember that oneness, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Do you want to read the last paragraph?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so all of this is pulled together on Kenneth Lighthouse article, Our Equality with Jesus, a Child, a Man, and Then a Spirit. And you can get it on the website collection of newsletter articles, which I'm sure, Bruce, you're very aware of and might even be able to give us some insight into those newsletter articles.
Well, actually, since you mentioned that, yes, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles does have a recently released book that's a compilation of all the Lighthouse articles. I haven't got a copy yet, but I've seen it. Several people at the Rocky Mount Miracle Center have it. And it looks beautifully bound, and it has a lot of supplemental material that isn't on the web. And if anyone is interested in the wonderful series of articles that Ken wrote for the Lighthouse series that were quarterly, I highly recommend. And if you happen to live in the Denver area, I've attended a couple times remotely, but if you happen to be in the Denver area, Chris Dixon Bubik has a wonderful quarterly meeting at the Rocky Mount Miracle Center on the Lighthouse articles, and we've been going through them for a number of years, and just it's a great little study group if you happen to be in the Denver area when those are happening, as well as all their other weekly things that they have going there all the time. And that's you can go to RockyMountainMiracleCenter.org and find out about all their programs for those in the Denver area. But there's, you know, obviously wonderful programs all over the world that are course related things that folks are doing that you can be aware of. And I try to keep a list of some of those things, certainly not an exhaustive set, on acim.org, or acimblog.com rather. But I'm working on acim.org too, and making progress with that. So just a quick update that we're getting closer to launching the new site for Foundation for Inner Peace. So fun stuff. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Let me just finish this paragraph. And this is perfect. This is great information, because this kind of information is really helpful to people. So another resource is our tape CD set, which you can get MP3 of it, mm-hmm. Which I think I'm going to do. Jesus, Symbol, and Reality, in which Kenneth focuses on the growth from spiritual childhood to spiritual maturity, which that's exactly, I think, what would really be helpful to people. You know, I just know so many people, and, you know, I'm not judging them in any way at all, because, you know, this is just what happens, you know, who have had some insights and, you know, suddenly believe that they've, done it all. And there's no reason to try to convince them that they haven't. But when you experience their behavior and they're still aggressive and angry and judgmental and fearful, and, you know, you're recognizing, well, you know, that isn't the kind of awakening that I'm looking for. So there is a lot more, you know, we still have a lot of growth. And then chapter 17, An Absence from Felicity, also presents this spectrum in the context of Helen Schuckman's experience of Jesus. So that's a really good clue, and I've got that book sitting right here.
Yeah, I'm about due to reread that one myself, because it's a lot in there. One comment on the audio programs. I just got an email from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and you can get on their mailing list very easily if you go to facim.org, as well as acim.org. You can get on both mailing lists for those two wonderful sister organizations that have done and contributed so much for all of us in the global course community. Anyway, on the FACIM newsletter, they just announced yesterday that they're having even more of their MP3 discs that are on special sale. And they've been basically trying to phase out the physical media. So if you want to have hard copies, physical copies of the audio, this is a really good time to go to their website and get some of those audio programs. I'm not going to probably be able to do this week, or this month, just because I'm so busy, is there's the wonderful programs that they have on streaming video from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles too, that are just beautifully picking up where Ken left off and continuing that work, and all highly recommended. There's one day and 2 and 3 day academy classes that are now streamed online, and you can attend those wherever you like and whenever you like. They have them available like for a week and a half or so after the event, which you can listen to live. So if you don't happen to have the time available, you can listen to them after the fact. So, but highly recommended. So anyway, so have
very
a great
cool.
week, everyone. And I think we've run over our generous 90 minutes already. So thanks again.
That's
Lynn.
All right. I see Barb just come in. I haven't seen Devin come in yet. So,
okay.
So I think we're cool. So what were you going to say?
Oh, just thanks to everyone for participating, and have a great week. Love to all.
All right. Thank you, Bruce, and I love you, brother. It's always a pleasure to join with you, and, this is the best when we can join together.
Exactly.
Rev Tony was asking me, do you have any teachings that you'd like me to put on the website of just you? And I said, no, all the teachings that I like are the ones that I do with someone else. because really it's the joining that
it is. And I have the same thoughts as well. Is that, for a year or two, I was kind of doing a solo monologue, and that's okay. But the conversation, I think, is what really, the complement of what seems to be lacking or separate or different When we come together with a purpose of recognizing that that's silly, it adds so much depth to it, doesn't it? I think the whole of just the two of us coming together, as we've been doing for over a year now, is so much more than the sum of its parts. And it's true with any of us. Any you know, when two or more are gathered in my name, you know, that's one of the places in the Bible that they didn't mess up too bad.
Yep, exactly. So, beautiful. Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Bruce. And
likewise.
I love you. And I'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week, all.
Bye-bye.